Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Also known as just a great day for gardening. I look at today as a day that you can go outside, little sprinkles or not, and just garden your face off, Rick.
Is
that what you'll be doing today?
Outside is weather.
There will be no gardening today, Dave. Will be no gardening today. I gardened yesterday. I picnicked like an idiot. I decided that it'd be a good idea after the picnic to just fall asleep in the sun. I have a savage tan right now, almost borderline burn. It's gross. I'm all aloed up. My back looks like Tom Coughlin's face in Green Bay at this moment.
Wow, that's all bad, Rico.
All bad. I was letting Ella do my hair. She wanted to, oh, Dad, here, let's go to the salon. And she's doing my hair. My hair passed out, woke up, just burnt to a crisp. Gross.
I don't even know what to say.
Chris, Dave, there is nothing to say. We just have to keep powering forward, man.
But if you had given me a list of 12,000 things of where he could potentially go, getting a vicious sunburn yesterday would have been not even on the list of 12,000.
No, you're probably right. I didn't expect the sunburn. What I did expect is for that low back to be hurting, because we know that if you're going to get out there and do some yard work, it's going to be a little tough on you, especially what Rico talked about with spreading the mulch everywhere. So, yeah, I knew that probably wasn't going to go well. As soon as Cassie handed down that mandate, I was like, it's not going to end well for my boy.
Was yesterday a mulching day, or has the mulch not arrived yet?
No, the mulch has not arrived yet. Yesterday was planning for the arrival of the mulch. It was getting, I mean, I got a bunch of tweets, what I need. I was trying to go back and forth. Do I lay some stuff for the weeds? And then Cassie looked it up. Of course, she WebMD'd it. Apparently, that's not safe, so I can't use the preen. So now I may have to resort to doing some trash bags over the initial dirt, so the weeds don't grow up through the mulch. This is the whole process, Dave. This is all bad. There's nothing good about this.
No, there's nothing good about it. There is a little bit of good news, though, guys. And I don't know if you saw what Bob Nightingale from USA Today had to report, is that I guess there's a realer than, you know, discussion possibility that Major League Baseball returns at the end of June or early July with a 100-game season and three divisions broken up into 10 teams each. And that seems it's more than just like a pipe dream. It sounds, Chris, right now, like there's some real juice to this story.
No, it does, and we've been hearing it for a couple of days, so it makes me feel like we're gaining some traction in terms of the return of live team sports, and based on what we're hearing from public health officials and people in government, they're trying to, you know, move forward with reopening the country, and we know that sports figures to be a big part of it. The only concern that I really have, Dave, is that we're not at a point where the testing is available for everybody that wants it, and we know that if you're going to start back with live sports, that's probably the biggest hurdle to clear, having rapid, reliable testing, because I think that's the only way that you can make sure that players are safe and that you can keep people safe. You got to be able to figure out who's got the virus and who doesn't, so you can isolate people, so you can have the proper protocols to protect everybody else that's involved with putting these games on.
Yeah, I think Greeny said it the best this morning on Get Up, is you can't allow perfect to stand in the way of good. And I mean, this isn't, I mean, they're trying to make chicken salad out of you know what. I mean, they're trying to find a way to get baseball started. I agree with Chris. You're going to need to have the rapid testing. You're going to need to have, you know, the players at least feel like going back into these ballparks that they're going to be safe to a certain degree. Obviously, there's some risk, but there needs to be a way to treat COVID-19 if one of the players gets it. This can't be, I'm signing up for putting my life at risk. It has to be, okay, I mean, you could potentially get it. And if you do get it, you know, here's how we'll treat it.
But Rick, not just your life, the life of your loved ones, because Sean Doolittle's wife on Real Sports talked about how she struggles with the respiratory illness, and she was afraid for her life because her husband's down in Florida at spring training, and you just don't know the people that he's going to be around, because they were still allowing folks to come into those spring training facilities early on. So, I mean, it's a very real concern, because it's not just about the one player and them getting it and how it affects them, but it's how it affects everybody else on the team. It's about how it affects everybody in their network. And that's the scary part about this thing, if you don't have reliable testing that you can fall back on.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Chris, because I got into a fight last night with my mom, Mickey
Uh-oh.
Rourke.
Oh, stop
well,
it.
Because she's off. Well, no, because, I mean, we just have FaceTime, and she's off Gallivan. Like, she's, like, going to Target and all these other places. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? Did you need to go to Target? She's like, no, I was bored. I said, do you realize, okay, and I had an epiphany to Chris's point, because Chris made a great point, is that by you now gallivanting out to Target or wherever it is, and God forbid you get COVID-19, like the amount of emotional shrapnel that you'll leave behind if God forbid you do get it and something bad happens and you can't fight it, like, you, I mean, you're not just affecting yourself. You're affecting everyone that loves you because you decided that you wanted to, you know, get some fresh air and go to Target. It aggravated me a little bit.
Well, it should aggravate you.
I'm like, you already went through it. I'm like, do you want my brother and I to get the phone call that, you know what, yeah, your mom's not doing so well because she, you know, she just can't battle this COVID-19. No, you don't want that. So do what you're supposed to do. And she's like, well, I didn't even think about it. I'm like, well, now you should probably think about it because it's going to affect everyone. It's going to affect my kids and Al's kids and your sister and your brother and everyone else that's going to have to deal with, God forbid, something bad happens.
Yeah, and she went out for no reason, really. That's the thing that's so frustrating to me. If she was starving for food and needed to suck it up and go to a supermarket and get that done, you know what? She kind of has to do that. But she was bored and went to Target? Come on.
Yeah, she just wanted to pick some things up. I said, did you need the things? Well, I mean, it wasn't urgent. I said, well, okay, Mom, please do me a favor. Don't, let's not do this again because I don't want to have this conversation again. And here's the thing, though. I was actually thinking about this when I read, you know, Bob Nightingale's story. To be completely honest, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or if you feel the same way, if I was given the option, you know, currently with my situation, I got, you know, wife and two kids, young kids, I would almost rather not be in the city with my family. Like, I wouldn't want the option
to
stay with
my family. You
want to
be locked away in Arizona?
I think I would.
Yeah,
I think
I would also.
I'd be afraid to bring it back to my wife and kids if I did catch it or had it and didn't know.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because at least if you're locked away, you're away from the people that are closest to you. So if you get it, you're not going to pass it on to them. If you carry it, if you're asymptomatic, whatever, you're not going to pass it on to them. If you're going to Yankee Stadium and then you're sleeping in your bed at night, and I know they say there's not going to be fans, but there's still going to be people. There's going to be other players. There's going to be, I got to figure in some capacity, press members and camera guys and PR. Like, there's going to be people around. You're going to be interacting with a lot of people during the course of the day. Maybe not as many as you usually would, but still a lot. And then to go home and bring whatever it is you have on you into your home. Yeah, listen, it's so unknown. I think everything gets you nervous now, Chris. I think that every situation and scenario gets you concerned and gets you nervous.
Yeah, there's a need to be concerned. And I think that every sports league is taking this seriously now. That wasn't necessarily the case early on with the virus, but I think that everybody has reacted appropriately in terms of suspending the season or not starting the season and trying to figure out what's the best way forward where we can keep everybody that's involved safe. And I think now everybody is comfortable with the conclusion that we're not going to have fans in stadiums and arenas. And so I think that is going to protect a lot of people, but you're still going to have a lot of folks that are involved with putting these productions for, you know, getting all of these things organized in terms of allowing the athletes to play the games. And so you're wondering, okay, what's the best thing that we can do in order to keep them safe? And I think they're asking themselves those questions now, but I also think they're coming up with solutions. That's why you heard the thing about the Arizona, Arizona hosting, you know, Major League Baseball teams and starting a season out there, or, you know, having the players, you know, stay at the spring training locations and having the games there. I think that baseball is trying to figure out the most pragmatic way, the most practical way in order to, you know, move forward with having a season. And right now, Dave, I think I would probably lean toward, more likely than not, that the season is going to be up and running by July.
But Dave,
here's the thing though. I mean, in reading through this thing, and I know that, I mean, when push comes to shove, it is about the money. I don't necessarily know if this new plan that seems to be, you know, gaining traction with, you know, the three divisions, 10 teams, and playing in your own Major League Baseball stadiums is necessarily the safest plan for the players. I get why they're doing it, because they want to, I mean, again, we're just looking for, you know, buy time so we have more answers. I mean, the attractive part of this plan is that you're playing in your own stadiums, right? Like, you're not in spring training stadiums in Florida and Arizona. So if, you know, by chance 3 months from when the season starts, all of a sudden there's a vaccine and everything else, at least there is the opportunity to have fans come to your ballpark to make up the money that way. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, but couldn't, and I'm just spitballing here, thinking on the fly, couldn't you do that anyhow? Couldn't you play in Arizona? And if you get to the point where there's a vaccine or the virus is, you know, almost dormant or whatever the case may be, switch to those stadiums?
I guess you could, but I mean, all of a sudden now you're talking about more travel and everything else. I mean, I think the appealing thing about this is all of a sudden it's in your own stadium, start with no fans. You eventually get the green light because there's a vaccine. Now all of a sudden you get people coming to games, even if it's socially distancing. So now, you know, people that work for the team in concessions and parking and everything else can get back to work, as opposed to just, I mean, whoever's in Arizona and whoever's in Florida, as far as who you'd hire to work the games. I just don't like all the traveling. I mean, there's a lot more traveling around this way. I understand the teams are closer, but it, I mean,
right. Here's the proposal, and we'll do the East, because that's what both local teams would be in. The Yankees and Mets would be in this East. The Red Sox, it's not a far trip. The Nationals, still within reason. Orioles as well. Phillies. Pirates starts to get a little further. Toronto's a trip. Tampa's a trip. And Miami's a trip. So you're talking about plane travel. You're not talking about being locked away in a biodome of Arizona. You're talking about legitimate team travel where you've got to load. I mean, so what does this mean? You know, are we doing the game? Is Michael Kay traveling down to Tampa, or is he doing it from a studio in New York City? Like, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions, more than we can probably even think of right now, that have to be answered before we can get here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you know, this isn't as simple as, and I think, you know, a lot of the initial ideas, like I mentioned, you know, the NHL may be considering, you know, somewhere like Tampa because there's so many hotels and walking distance to the arena, to the rink. And this isn't, you know, jump on a bus and go from hotel, like take a 10-minute ride to the ballpark. This is, you know, either your own car or a bus to the airport, jump on a plane. Now from the plane, another bus to the hotel. I mean, it just seems like, I mean, there's a lot more opportunities to have guys contract COVID-19 this way, as opposed to, you know, two cities or whatever it is with hotels close to wherever you're playing.
But I think the reality, though, Rick, is that some of these players, once you resume the games and the season, some of these players are going to be infected with the virus. I think the biggest thing is making sure that you have a plan on how you're going to deal with that. First of all, being able to identify those guys, being able to test them, and then being able to isolate them so as they don't affect the rest of the players on your team or players on another team. So I think that's the biggest thing. You got to have the reliable testing so you can, you know, make sure that everybody that's participating in the games is actually healthy enough to be out there and that they don't run the risk of transmitting it to other players.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I'm not necessarily concerned. I mean, because you know this, Chris. I mean, you played the most physical of all the sports. Every time you step on the field, I mean, you're laying your life on the line. I mean, you could, you know, get paralyzed or whatever it is. I think it's just inherent risk as an athlete you take on, as a professional athlete. You're getting paid millions of dollars. There is some inherent risk. I would be more concerned as a Major League Baseball player that I infected my family members. And how do they deal with COVID-19? I can understand, like, me, okay, you know what? I'll risk it. If I get it, I'll have the best doctors. I'll have the best treatment. I'm in great shape. You know, I'll find a way, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, to get through this thing. My biggest fear would be all of a sudden I'm asymptomatic, haven't been tested in a couple days. I come home, sleep in the same bed as my wife, hug and kiss my kids, and then all of a sudden, you know, one of them have it. And they're not in nearly as good a shape as I am.
You're right. I mean, from the player's perspective, that would be the thing that you worry about the most. I'm just talking about it from an ownership standpoint, because that's ultimately where the decision is going to be made. It's going to be with Rob Manfred and the owners, whether or not they actually start the season. You know, even if it's a truncated season, even if we're talking about the end of June, beginning of July, the gatekeepers are the owners. And I think if they're going to make the decision to start playing, they want to make sure that they can have, you know, the players that they're anticipating, the players that everybody wants to see, healthy and available to actually be out there on the field.
No, I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying, like, if when push comes to shove and whatever the plan ends up being, and you go through the pros and cons of the plan, and, you know, we get the money figured out where, you know, either we're taking pay cuts. I think that's going to end up being a problem because they already thought they came to an agreement. I mean, the more I think about it, the reality of me playing for the New York Mets, having to travel by plane to, you know, Toronto, to Tampa, to Miami, and then coming home to my family would scare the hell out of me. I mean, I think I would much rather sign up for the Biodome situation.
I agree with that. I mean, as far as what seems to be the safer of the two, Is it even up for debate? I mean, if you're locked away in Arizona, who cares what ballparks you're playing in? If you're playing in a minor league park or a spring training park or the Diamondbacks facility, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're going to be playing in Yankee Stadium with no fans anyway, there's no home field advantage. It doesn't make a difference. It's not like people are going to the game. So for me, I think it's much safer just to lock it away in one city, keep it contained, test a ton, and let all the games be played there.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, Dave, at all. I think it's, like Rick said, it's also going to come down to them making the money work, because these owners stand to lose a lot of money, a lot of revenue, because they're not going to be getting the concessions and the parking and all the other ancillary things that come along with fans going out to attend the ball game at those stadiums. So I think that they've got to come to some agreement in terms of, you know, what the financials will look like. And that's as big a part of this equation as is trying to find, you know, the rapid, reliable testing and putting protocols in place to keep everybody safe.
There's just so many. I mean, this is, and I've heard it talked about a couple different ways. I mean, none of these are great ideas, and you're just trying to find, you know, the best of what are, I mean, not ideal circumstances. I understand that, and maybe there's some good that comes out of this with, both leagues having the DH and everything else. I don't know, man. There's so many moving parts trying to put together a regular season. Like, I mean, if it comes down to at the end of it with the NBA and the NHL, where you're playing just playoffs, I mean, that's probably the best situation to get games going as soon as possible.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And how do you have, not even the Rangers or Islanders, because those are teams that would really kind of be screwed with the whole situation, that were right there as far as the playoffs are concerned. But how do you finish your regular season and have the Ottawa Senators, who are playing for absolutely nothing, go out there and take the ice? Or Golden State in the NBA, or the Knicks for that matter. It doesn't add up to me. Why would you possibly have those teams playing regular season
games?
Well,
it adds up. It adds up. I mean, you're talking about the money. I mean, you've made a commitment to, and this isn't just, you know, your national TV deals. This is your local TV deals, and you're trying to make them whole. If you can make them whole so it doesn't affect you next year when you hope things are back to normal, then that's what you're going to try to do. I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think it should be, I mean, even if you're trying to give, you know, if it's NBC, and I'm sure NBC would love for the NHL to come back since there's no Olympics, right? I mean, they're incentivized now to get
something
on TV.
We'd all love it to come back.
Like, even in the NBA. I don't think, you're right. I didn't necessarily like what Steve Kerr said, but in all honesty, I mean, their season is over. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're playing for nothing. I mean, they would rather it end now and then, you know, have their odds to have the first overall pick. But, I mean, I would be excited if they found a way to have, you know, 9-10, 11, and 12, or whatever it is, or, you know what I mean? Or whatever it is. Like, I'd like to see Zion play in a best of three, or in the NHL to see, you know, the last four teams play best of three to get the last two wild card spots, something like that. So you get extra games, but they're actually really meaningful games.
Yeah, because honestly, I mean, to see the Knicks play, what? Why? And I'm not even just saying from a Knicks fan, like from a national standpoint, why would the Knicks play? Why would Golden State play? Why would Ottawa play? Why would these teams that have, I mean, there's no reason for them to play games other than the obvious, which is trying to, you know, raise a little bit of money for the, you know, the sports channels and the announcers and the and everything. It makes no sense that these teams would play games moving forward here.
Yeah, I'm with Rick on this one. If it doesn't make sense, it makes dollars. And the only reason that the teams that are in the bottom half of the league would actually resume play is because you're talking about them satisfying their obligations with the media companies, television rights deals, not only with the national entities, but also with the local stations. So, I mean, I don't think that's a good enough reason for those teams to get back involved in whatever, you know, semblance of regular season, postseason that those respective sports have. I think that's a way that you can mitigate the risk of other players getting the virus, is just that you cut down on the number of teams that are actually participating, because the reality is that there are only certain teams that fans want to see, the better teams competing in the postseason for whatever title that's going to be on the line.
Yeah, I think you got a situation too. I mean, just looking at the NHL standings right now, I mean, if you had, you know, top six teams, top three in the Atlantic, top three in the Metro qualify, and then all of a sudden you had, you know, Carolina, Columbus, the Islanders, and the Rangers play a best of three to see who ends up with those wild card spots. I mean, you're getting the extra games, you're getting meaningful games. So, I mean, listen, I think the one thing you can count on and this is not a hot take, but this is something I think is going to happen, is that NHL and NBA seasons, not this season, the following season, will both start later than usual.
Yeah. I don't know how they can't almost at this point.
You have to, because, I mean, why would you – first of all, I mean, the NHL in particular, I mean, they rely a lot on the gate, right? This isn't the NBA and the NFL that have these humongous national TV deals. So why would you burn – like, why would you burn 2 months of not having fans in stands if you could potentially wait, start your season in whatever it is, you know, end of November, December, whatever it ends up being, and at least give yourself the opportunity that maybe – you luck out and there is a vaccine and people will kind of return to some semblance of normalcy.
I know it sounds like you'd be operating backwards, but I kind of agree with what you're saying. You can't let what happens with this year and resuming play in a regular season or postseason, whatever format you come up with, you can't allow that to impact what you have going on next year. Now, you know you're going to have the delayed start, but it's almost like, okay, if we're in a situation where we're trying to figure out, okay, what do we want to try to, you know, move forward with having a regular season to finish off what we started and then go into the postseason? Or do we want to have a shortened regular season or no regular season and jump straight to the postseason as to not affect the start of next year? I mean, I guess that's what you would have to think about if you're Gary Bettman in the NHL. Now, as far as the NBA is concerned, they've already said that they want to push back the start of the season anyway. So I don't know them resuming the regular season, how much of it would really impact when they actually want to start the season?
No, I think both. I think what you need to consider is give yourself as much time as possible now to figure things out as far as how you finish your season and have, you know, award a champion. Like, you want that to get, I mean, I would, if I was a commissioner of any of these leagues, I'd want that to have, I mean, that would be a priority. Let's get through a playoffs. Let's have a champion. But I would also, I mean, I'd be speaking to everybody. I mean, they're having conversations with the president. I'd be talking to Anthony Fauci. I'd be talking to CD, whatever it was, to find out, like, ballpark. I know no one knows, but in all reality, like, give me best case scenario for when we could have fans in seats. And if they say, listen, we don't really know, it's probably not going to be, it won't be September, it won't be October, maybe November, then I'm saying to myself, well, why am I going to all of a sudden now, when I rely so much on the gate, burn 2 months of my season with no fans, if I can just now push the season back? We'll still play the same amount of games, but I'll just plan moving forward that, like the NBA, we're going to start up in December and then work the schedule from there.
And what do you lose? Like, like, I don't even see the downside. If you're the NBA and you're going to start on Christmas Day, which seems like the ideal for them, and push back the finals a little bit and the season gets extended out, what's the downside? I don't really see the negative as far as that's concerned.
I don't think there is a downside, Dave. And I know Woj talked about it a little bit on Monday, but he said that that's one of the biggest concerns for team owners in the NBA, is the ability to have fans back in the arenas for the next season that you're going to have. I think that's kind of what they're looking at. And if that means delaying the season, the start of it a couple of months, if you're talking about starting at the end of December as opposed to the end of October, I think that that's something that the players and coaches would be on board with. But I think it's also something, you know, from a practical standpoint, that gives you an opportunity, a realistic shot at having fans in there, just because you've given yourself more time to learn about the virus and for there to be a vaccine or a treatment protocol put in place that could keep fans, coaches, players, everybody safe if they're attending those games.
Yeah, I think the other issue too, and this is, I mean, this is the reality of the situation, is, I mean, there are some teams in all these sports, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, that don't necessarily need fans in stands. Like the Toronto Maple Leafs make, I think the last time we did the CBA negotiations, I think they made like $300 million, right? Which was a huge number. So, I mean, they could probably get by without having fans for a certain amount of time and be okay with it. But, I mean, during the CBA negotiations, you know, the owner of our team, Charles Wong, pretty much told us, hey, listen, I make more money not having games. Like, me having to open up the building is costing me more money than I'm making. That's the reality for some of these teams, is that by starting these seasons, I mean, if you don't have fans in stands, it's not in their best interest.
Yeah, I guess it's not. And the one sport, and I know it's not a professional sport, but it's a huge moneymaker, is college football. Because I don't know that it makes sense for them to put the games on with no fans in stands from a financial perspective.
And no, that's going to be pushed back to spring, Dave. I saw a number the other day. They're almost 30% of their revenue is gate.
Right.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
So is that the one we feel most confident in right now is going to take place, but in the spring? Like, I can't see. I mean, August is not far off. I just don't see how you have 80,000 people at, you know, in Penn State football games in September.
I don't see it either, Dave, and I'm confident that it probably won't get off to the regularly scheduled start for a different reason. I just don't see how you could justify having these college football players actually in stadiums playing games, fans or no, if you don't have students on campus. Like, if you're saying that it's not safe to open up the campus for students to go there and get their education, then why would it be safe for student athletes to actually be in campus where it would probably be safer for them sheltering exactly where they're at right now? That's the part of it that I can't make sense of.
It doesn't make sense. And more importantly, if you don't have students, you're not going to have full stadiums. You're not going to have anyone in the stadiums. And does that make sense financially for these schools to have, 100,000 empty seats for games?
No.
If the potential is that they could move it back to the spring, give themselves more time, and hopefully we're at a point with this virus that there will be people going to games.
I hope so. All right, 800-919-3776. Now, there's everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. Field Yates is going to join us at 11 o'clock. Chris, he is one of my absolute favorites. He's going to join us right at the top of the 11 o'clock hour.
Oh, Field is great, man. Field is awesome. I'm sure he's got a lot of insight on what's going on with the Green Bay Packers, because there was a bombshell of an article and there was some, I don't know, inflammatory things said about Aaron Rodgers. So I'm interested to get his take on it.
Absolutely.
I can tell you this right now. I refuse. I'm not doing it. Until he admits that he's RJ Santillo. I mean, one of the producers.
Until he admits it, he probably doesn't even know who RJ Santillo is.
No, he doesn't know who, because he is him. They're the same person. They've never been seen together ever. RJ Santillo is Field Yates.
That's a great point. That's a great point. They've never been seen together.
What do you mean you're not doing it? What does that mean?
Until he admits it, I'm not doing it. You guys can listen. Fire away with the questions. Go at it. I'll just sit back. I'm not doing it.
You're not going
to
do the interview.
It's not fair.
You will not conduct the interview because you think that he's RJ Santillo.
Yeah, and RJ Santillo is not getting the credit he deserves. Just Field is. I don't like it. I'm not doing it.
Chris, you and I, 11 o'clock, Field Yates will join the show.
Yeah, we'll hold it down, Dave.
I think we will. All right. 800-919-3776.
I'm going to go sit in a tub of aloe.
What happened?
I'm going to go sit in a tub of aloe because my skin is peeling off.
I don't understand. Who gets burned?
I got torched. I fell asleep in the sun, Dave.
I don't even know that it was really warm enough to take your shirt off yesterday.
Listen, I don't care what the temperature is. If the sun's out and I can get some vitamin D, the shirt is off. So I had the shirt off picnicking and then went night-night and then woke up and I just...
And the whole family leaves? They just like scurry inside as you're outside burning to a crisp?
No, they didn't scurry inside. I mean, Milo got a new scooter. He was bombing around. We had the sidewalk chalk out. They were drawing pictures and everything else. And for some reason, Cassie thought it was a good idea. You know what? Maybe Dad needs a couple minutes to close his eyes, and all hell broke loose.
All right, so you're getting a vat of aloe.
I got to do something to soothe myself right now. I got no shirt on now. I can't touch it.
You're that badly burned?
I am. Dead.
You know what would happen?
This is you on your honeymoon.
I don't know that you're that bad. You should have had a swim shirt on, a beautiful swim shirt, and this wouldn't have happened.
a driveway swim shirt.
Yeah. I mean, if you would have had just a beautiful UV protected shirt, none of this would have happened.
Dave, where are you with the swim shirt now? Because I know you've had this whole weight loss thing. You look great, but I mean, are you going to wear a swim shirt this summer? Or are you going shirtless?
I don't know. We'll probably continue to wear the shirt unless I just absolutely lather myself in sunblock.
Okay. I know you were on the fence about it. I know you talked about or flirted with the idea of not wearing a swim shirt.
It's out there. I don't know. We'll determine as we get a little bit closer.
I don't like it.
You want me to continue with the swim shirt?
I just feel like all of a sudden, I mean, you lost so much weight. I mean, God forbid the shirt's off. I mean, you accidentally step on your nipple or something. Like, you could stub a nipple.
Yeah, and that's not a tremendous concern. The guest today, Buster Olney, will be on with Bart and Hahn at 2 o'clock. I love Buster. He might be my favorite guest that we have. I just think he's the best.
But you like him more than Feinbaum?
It's very close.
Okay.
I think I might.
All right.
I think I might. How would you power rank the guests?
Well, I'm not going to get into that, but I know that you saying you like Olney better than Feinbaum. Feinbaum is going to take some shots on you whenever we start talking to him again.
Which might not be till next spring, so I'm buying myself.
Because you know we heard that.
He doesn't miss anything.
Of course he heard it. You don't think that's a salacious statement, do you, Rick, to say that I might like Buster as my number one guest?
I don't think it's salacious by any means. I mean, I wouldn't choose to.
I think it's unnecessary
to say that. Yeah, I think it's unnecessary. I love both for different reasons. I mean, I love Buster only because I love baseball, and I could have a 3-hour conversation about baseball and the information. I love Feinbaum because he is, I mean,
ruthless.
He's hilarious.
Yeah, he's ruthless. He'll take shots at anybody. And the governor of New Jersey, Phil Murphy, is going to be on the K Show at 5 o'clock today. So good. And then we have Field Yates at 11 o'clock. And I don't know if you're participating in that interview or not, but regardless of your participation, he's going to join us at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not bluffing here. I'm not doing it. He stole RJ Santillo's look. He stole his identity. I'm not into it.
Well, isn't
that should be RJ?
Field, isn't he older than RJ?
No, because according to Rick, he's the same person.
The same person.
Yeah. Or he made a concerted effort. He saw RJ at some point when he came in to do whatever he was doing, to hit on whatever. Saw RJ, he's like, wow, that's a handsome son of a gun.
That's a look.
I want to look like him. And that's what he did. I mean, everyone's trying to go younger. RJ's a perfect fit. If you listen to the K Show, they play the last one standing, and they always go to RJ. If Don or Michael are struggling with a question, they go to RJ. Boom, he nails it. That's how good he is.
Terrific guy.
I think not.
See, that's what I'm talking about. So I'm not doing it.
Out of respect for RJ, you're not doing the interview.
Yeah, I started with RJ, and I'm going to stick with him.
Okay. It's going to make it awkward that you won't come on the interview, but that's fine. Field Yates, 11 o'clock here.
You think Rick ever cares about making it awkward, Dave?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. In fact, I think that there are many times where he'd prefer to make it awkward.
100%. Right? That's why we love him.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who used to go into the training room naked and shower if there was no one in the shower. I live to make it awkward.
You're doing a good job. keep it up. Whatever you're doing, keep it up. Did you watch that Yankees game at all last night? That game 7 of 2003, Chris?
I did not, actually, Dave. I didn't get to it. I told
Yankees
you I was on the grill last night, and then after we had dinner, went on a walk around the neighborhood. By the time we got back, it was a little on the later side, showered up, and then I locked in to watch Real Sports. I did not get to that 2003 playoff game for the Yankees.
I love Real Sports. That is a terrific show.
Oh, Brian Gumbel does an amazing job.
It's a great
show. And I thought Joe Buck and Mike Breen and Jim Nance did a phenomenal job in that panel discussion that they had at the end. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, I put it on the DVR. I didn't watch it yet. All right, so let's get
into it. How many people do you think were upset when they saw, like, on their TV guide that Real Sports, and they turned it on thinking they were going to get like a live sport?
Real Sports is back. HBO is very quietly bringing back Major League Baseball.
Rick, I wouldn't put it past them. If Corona sales are down because of the coronavirus, then yeah, there would be people that were disappointed that they didn't see live team sports last night.
Can you imagine how crazy we're going to go when it actually comes back? Whatever it is, whenever that the first baseball, basketball, hockey game is, we're going to go crazy.
Yeah, this is going to be like freshman year for the girl that you knew in high school that's parents wouldn't let them date. It's going to be that kind of crazy.
That kind of crazy.
Wow. All right. Okay.
Don't pretend like everyone listening doesn't know who I'm talking about.
We all know, which is why it's funny, but it's also why Dave has to move the show along.
Exactly. Moving right along. Joe Judge was on the K Show yesterday. Did you hear the talk about awkward pauses? Don.
Oh my God. That was not a pause. I thought the connection cut out.
But Don made a statement. And he didn't really ask a pointed question, and Joe Judge just sat there and waited and waited and waited, and then finally was like, was that a question? And then he kind of got into some semblance of an answer, but that was a little bit uncomfortable.
It was a little bit awkward. But what do you think? I mean, I knew what Don was doing, and I respect what he's doing, but I mean, listen, Joe Judge is not putting on an act.
No.
This is who Joe Judge is.
Yeah, this is what you get from him. This is exactly who he is. He's the guy that's, you know, not going to refer to the players by name. He's Belichick. I mean, he was schooled under Saban. He was schooled under Belichick, and this is what you're going to get. Whether you like it or not, this is what you get from Joe Judge.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see if it flies. I mean, we're saying that we're dealing with a different type of athlete in this generation as opposed to 20 years ago when Belichick started his coaching career. So, I mean, well, his head coaching career. But, I mean, in looking at it, I don't know if what Joe Judge brings to the table is going to be one of those things that gets the most out of the players that the Giants currently have. That's the part of it that I'm really interested to see. It sounds like he's the type of head coach that would put the structure in place that a team needs in order to be consistently competitive. But a part of getting the most out of your people is being able to build relationships with them. And I don't know that you not calling the guys out by name when you talk to the media is going to lead to you getting off to the best start in that regard.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. I mean, again, and who knows? I think it's always easier when you win games, when you start having one of those coaches that, you know, starts talking about stacking days, win the day and everything else. And, you know, all that equates to is more losing. It's tough to buy into that. But I think the one thing he does have going for him, and this is a testament to the kind of people that they are, his two best players, I mean, the two faces of the franchise, seem like the kind of guys that wouldn't really rock the boat too much with Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones.
No, they won't rock the boat too much. But with Saquon Barkley, you know you're going to have to pay him a lot of money after next season. And if the Giants hesitate in any way, shape, form, or fashion, that could present some problems in terms of Saquon Barkley putting on a good face for what the head coach wants to do.
Yeah, but I think he would do it now, though, wouldn't he? Put on the good face? Even if he's bothered by it? Look, we know who the starting quarterback's going to be. And I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority here. I don't think this is that big a deal. I really don't. If he's a good coach, I mean, you know he's going to be the starting quarterback. You know he's going to be the starting running back. It's just, it almost feels like it's just his way. I don't think it's that big a deal.
I don't think it's a big deal if Joe Judge did the right thing, which was talk to Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley about how he was going to approach the season. That's how it works best. Like, I mean, if you lay it out on the table and you have, you know, honest conversations with the leadership, your best players, and say, hey, this is who I am, this is how we're doing things, you can get them to buy in, yeah, then it's not a big deal.
No, I mean, you have to get your star players to buy in. That's no question about it. But, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. And right now, because those players aren't in the building with Joe Judge, they're just hearing what he has to say in the media, and they're hearing what's going on during the virtual offseason program. And I don't know if that's enough touch points for the head coach in order to establish the kind of rapport that you're going to need to pull some of the stunts that we've seen Bill Belichick do with his players in the past. I don't know if Joe Judge is going to be able to have that just based on the situation that he's stepping into in the offseason that we're going through.
All right. Well, he was asked yesterday on the K Show, why don't you say the players' names? Let's take a listen to that. Here's Joe Judge from yesterday.
It's not that I was ever trying to avoid saying someone's name. It's the context the questions were asked in. I'm a big believer, and listen, it's tough enough to do their job. Right now they have to focus on just learning their system, learning their scheme, fitting in and improving. I'm not trying to create expectations for them to go ahead out there and meet. You know, they've got enough on their plate already as it is, as everyone does on the team. You know, for me not to say Daniel or Saquon has nothing to do with me avoiding or trying to pretend they're not part of our roster. They absolutely are. But the reality is when the questions are asked in the context that they want you to put a title or a label on somebody, that's a tough thing. You know, I'm not going to put that on any player ever. You know, I'm not going to create expectations for them outside of what we demand as an organization already.
I would say it sounds a little bit strange, but you know who the starting quarterback is going to be.
That's what
you
I'm saying. I don't understand why putting Daniel Jones as QB1 or your starting quarterback, why that's a label that you would shy away from.
I don't understand either. Other than that's just the way that he's been brought up in his coaching life. I don't understand, but
here's what I don't understand. It's not an expectation. It's fact. And the fact is that Saquon Barkley is your starting running back and Daniel Jones is going to be your starting quarterback.
100%.
And that's the fact of the matter.
Right.
And if that isn't the case, then, I mean, your Giants have a real problem.
But it is. I mean,
I understand that.
There's no way it's not. There's zero. And I heard Michael talk about this. Like, you know, if Alex Tanny beats out Daniel Jones, that's an impossibility. Unless Daniel Jones, God forbid, is hurt, he's the starting quarterback. There's no way that Saquon Barkley's not the starting running back. So I will say this. It's strange. I don't understand why he's choosing this mountain to die on or this hill to die on, but he is, and this is his thing. So it's strange. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world.
Well, Dave, I guess the only reason that I would say it's something and not nothing is because it's unnecessary. Like, we all recognize who the starting quarterback and the starting running back are. I mean, you coming out here and saying that and attaching that label to those specific players, I don't think that's something that everybody else in the football world doesn't know. So I don't understand why he would be resistant to saying it. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like he's paying attention to something that really doesn't matter all that much. And
yeah,
that's my biggest concern with him being a new head coach. There's going to be a learning curve. You're going to make some mistakes, but this one seems like one that could be self-inflicted. This is not something that he should be focused on.
I guess my question would be, Rick, is how is this a mistake? Like, strange, yes. Unnecessary, absolutely. Is it definitively a mistake, though?
No, I don't think you can say it's definitively a mistake. I mean, it's going to be all how, you know, players on that team respond to him and what he's trying to do. I mean, what confuses me is, I mean, go through the list of players. If you're the head coach, I mean, I think it's incumbent on every head coach when you take over a new team, when you're trying to set the culture, is identify, you know, who you feel like the strongest leaders on your team are going to be. Who, I mean, positions of power, they're going to take my message from my mouth and translate that to everyone else in the locker room. I mean, go through the list. You're talking about the two most important players on your roster to take your message to the team is Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is not everyone in the locker room is the same. Some guys are different, and the good coaches recognize who's different and how certain guys need to be treated, and they adjust. The ones that don't are the ones that don't last long.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to John in Jersey. John, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Hope everybody's well.
How's it going, John?
Yep. Okay, so I just wanted to ask, with regard to Joe Judge saying the players' names are not into the media, I think, like Dave, you're saying, it's not as big of a deal because I think 98% of their relationship is going to be based on their own individual interactions with each other, not what's said to the media. I think Joe Judge has gotten already on the phone with Daniel and Saquon, and they've already started to establish their relationship. And what's said to the media is, you know, strange, yes, but I don't know that it's that big of a deal and it's going to affect their relationships. I just think that's not, I can't see that being accurate.
Well, John, you don't think something that the head coach says about a player or about a label in the media can affect that player in his relationship with said head coach?
But what if, you know, in the building, he's like, listen, you know, you guys are obviously the crown jewels of organization. Going to do everything we can to support you.
Yeah, but
John, I played for Bill Parcells, and I had a good relationship with Bill Parcells. That did not stop Coach Parcells from saying things through the media to try to get his players and try to motivate his guys. It happens all the time. Clearly, Joe Judge is taking this approach because he's trying to set a tone with his new team. I just don't understand why he's picking these two specific players to do it when everybody knows that Daniel Jones is the starting quarterback and Saquon Barkley is your starting running back. That part of it doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I'm not characterizing it as a mistake, but all I'm saying is I don't understand why he would be so focused, so hell-bent on not addressing them, not calling them by name when you put it into the context of those two players being the starters at their respective position.
Can I say one other thing?
Sure, go ahead.
So here's this. When it comes to, you know, what you're saying there, you're definitely making sense, but I just feel like there's got to be more of an emphasis. Maybe he's, you know, answering the questions with coach speak, answering the questions, not specific to the players, but just a general answer to a question. It's not like they're being asked about Connolly and Slayton and Williams. Can you say Daniel Jones's name? That's like, it just feels like a little, you know, I'm not doubting you know, 100 times.
No, but you just made Chris's point, which makes it weird. I mean, that's what makes it weird. I mean, I could understand if you get asked about, you know, someone that no one expects to be your number one wide receiver or your starting middle linebacker. But, I mean, it's not an expectation. It's the fact of the matter. Daniel Jones, who was drafted sixth overall, had a good rookie season, and Saquon Barkley, who was drafted second overall, they're going to be your starting quarterback and your starting running back. Unless you're trying to send a message. Like, unless you're going out of your way to try to set a tone. And don't just assume that every coach is smart enough to pick up the phone and have a conversation with his players. Look what happened just, I mean, perfect example. Look what happened with Bill O'Brien in Houston.
Yep.
I mean, what do you think it was smart to have a good relationship with your best wide receiver, your best offensive player, who, oh, by the way, has an unbelievable connection with your franchise quarterback? Yeah, that would make, I mean, that's common sense. But apparently that wasn't, I mean, what Bill O'Brien was interested in doing. They had no relationship, apparently.
Yeah, as strange as it is, I give him the benefit of the doubt for now. And maybe this will come out to be a huge issue and Saquon will hate him and Jones the same. But, you know, maybe he does it because it is those guys. Because if he does it, because who are the two highest profile guys on the team? It's those two, right? It's Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. So maybe if I make an example with those two guys, every one of the other 51 guys on this organization, or even more so with all the free agents and all that now, undrafted guys, maybe they see that if Jones / Barkley don't get any preferential treatment, nobody gets preferential treatment on this team.
I don't think it's about preferential treatment. I think it's just about, you know, recognizing the dynamics that you're going to be working with. And what you said cuts both ways, Dave. I mean, if you're going to treat guys that have done all the right things and said all the right things from the moment that they got there, if you're going to treat them like that, when it's obvious to everyone that they're the starters at their respective positions, then what does that say about you as a head coach? What is that? It's almost like you're doing things that are unnecessary and things that don't necessarily translate to winning, which is what I thought this whole thing was supposed to be about in the first place. So I think with this generation athlete, you got to be careful in terms of trying to establish a tone as a new head coach, especially in an offseason when you don't have the opportunity to be around those players and build the relationships as you typically would. So it's one of those things with Joe Judge that, like I said, I don't think it's nothing. I'm not going to make it out to be a mountain, but there's something to this, and I'm interested to see how it plays out when we actually get the players back in the building and we're gearing up for the regular season.
Ian Begley with a tweet. Leon Rose on Scott Perry, who will be GM under Rose and is a one-year deal for 2020-2021. Scott is a well-respected basketball executive who I've known for more than 20 years, and I look forward to continuing to work closely with him as we look to build a winning team in New York. So it sounds like, Rick, Scott Perry will be the GM for the foreseeable future with this organization.
Yeah, which probably makes sense under the current circumstances, right? Guy you know for 20 years, guy you trust. I mean, one-year contract. See how it works out. I mean, it's not like the Knicks are, you know, a couple pieces away from competing for a championship at this point.
Yeah, I don't think it's terrible. I mean, I don't even know what to say about it. Yeah, I guess.
I got to laugh about it, man. I mean, it was so dysfunctional this year. You got Scott Perry and Steve Mills having a press conference. And they're talking about, you know, the team having to get better after being 10 games into the season and then ultimately deciding to fire the head coach. And then you hire Mike Miller. And in this entire equation, the only person that's going to be out of Madison Square Garden is the interim head coach?
Feels like it, yeah.
Yeah.
it's almost like...
You guys don't see the irony in that?
there's some irony, but it's also like Steve Mills stinks.
I mean, what are the expectations with the Knicks?
Just be functional.
That's it. Just a little bit.
It's further proof for me that Steve Mills was here for way too long.
Well, I don't think that's even a debate. I mean, he was here for forever.
And if you're going to keep Scott Perry with how dysfunctional this season was with the press conference and everything else, you didn't get the free agents that you told your owner you were going to get, and then you hire Leon Rose and he chooses to keep Scott Perry, I mean, that's an indictment on the job that Steve Mills did.
But do you need this to indict Steve Mills? I mean, Steve Mills did not do a good job with this team for a long time.
No, but if you're looking for the one consistent thing about, you know, James Dolan owning the New York Knicks has been for almost all of the 20 years. I mean, yeah, it was parts of 17 seasons with Steve Mills.
That's correct. All right, let's bring him in. Questions du jour. Andy Merrick, you're on 98.7. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, guys. You have been red hot, and I'm going to see if I can step up my game a little bit.
Okay.
Chris.
What's up, Andy?
I'm going to take you out of the ACC.
All right.
And back to your roots in the Bronx. Put on your Yankee hat. Andy Pettit's 2020 strikeouts as a New York Yankee are the most in team history. Pettit, of course, was a left-hander. In fact, five of the top six Yankee strikeout artists have been left-handed. Can you name the right-hander?
Now, this is career strikeouts with the Yankees.
With the Yankees only, correct.
Ooh, okay. All right. Now you're going to force me to put my thinking cap on.
Right-hander.
I feel like this is a diabolical question.
This is a diabolical question.
It's a tough one.
So you really. I mean, you're looking to embarrass Chris here today. Is that's
no, cool. No. Listen, it's okay. I mean, this is what we do.
The Hall of Fame pitcher.
Hall of Fame pitcher. Righty with the Yankees.
I have no idea, Andy. I have no idea.
All right. The list goes lefty Andy Pettit, lefty Whitey Ford, lefty Ron Guidry, lefty CeCe Sabathia, righty Red Ruffing, Hall of Famer.
Red Ruffing.
And then lefty Gomez, top six.
Red Ruffing. Okay.
I would have guessed, by the way, Mussina actually on that list.
By the way, Andy, seven.
That was first degree. I mean, you'd be in charge with first degree
assault,
intent to embarrass. I mean, there's intent with that question.
Chris has been red hot. He's gotten every question right.
So you wanted to chop him off at the knees. That's what I mean. Let's be fair.
Chop him off at the knees. He's still 6'4".
You wanted to potentially look him in the eye. That's a tough question.
That was a tough question. That was on the same level as your question yesterday, Dave.
Let's see if Rick can get his. Among players eligible for the Hockey Hall of Fame, which means not active players or not recently retired, who has the most career points without induction into the Toronto Museum?
But are currently still eligible for the Hall of Fame.
Currently still eligible. It's a retired player. Most points without being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Most points. This guy must be a bad guy. These questions are brutal today. This guy must be a real bad guy. He's not. He is retired.
Retired. End of his career overlaps with yours.
Ooh, that's a spicy little hint you just gave me. Most career points, not yet inducted into the Hall of Fame, but is currently eligible for the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
I'm starting to wish that I paid more attention to who was inducted into the Hall of Fame and who wasn't. I'm going to only ask for one more hint. Did he play for a team that was in the same division as the Islanders?
He actually did a stint with the Islanders.
Was he a teammate of Rick's?
No.
Okay.
He actually did a stint with the Islanders. Now you have me all confused. Most points. Did he play for the Islanders before me?
Yes, long before you.
Oh, long before me. Well, I mean, that's how much longer before me if he's still eligible for the Hall of Fame?
Late 80s.
Did he play with the Sabres?
I believe he did play with the Sabres, yes.
Played for the Islanders and the Sabres.
Was he drafted by the Sabres?
Why am I blanking?
He would have been drafted by the Sabres. That was his first NHL team.
I think I know who it is.
You think you know who it is?
I think.
Everyone but me knows who it is.
Did he take a very dirty hit during a playoffs one time?
Pat LaFontaine.
Not LaFontaine.
Did he take a very...
Dale Hunter laid him out.
Yep.
Oh.
Pierre Turgeon.
Yep,
they just showed this game the other night. Idiot I am. Dummy.
All right. 0-2 today, guys.
Oh, how good do you feel, Andy?
Feeling pretty good because
you feel really good.
Question. Basketball. Okay. Ready?
There we go.
Among players eligible for the Basketball Hall of Fame, meaning they're not active or not recently retired. Which player has the most career rebounds not inducted into Springfield?
Oh, my God. All right. Most career rebounds not inducted into Springfield. All right, so it's not going to be a Moses Malone. I mean, so it's got to be a guy that was really good. See, I wish I knew who was that. I mean, Robert Parrish, I'm imagining, is in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
All right.
See, this is what here's what makes these questions tough. If you would ask you an NFL question that had to do with the Hall of Fame, you'd probably have, I mean, you have a much
probably.
Better idea.
I think I have my guess, though.
Okay.
Is he an ACC product?
He was an ACC product.
Was he a local player?
There was local flavor for him.
Buck Williams.
Man, you got it.
Yes! Ah, Dave. Yes! I saved us!
Fantastic.
You really are.
Thank
Stay
you.
Healthy, guys.
Thank you.
That's unbelievable, Dave.
Yes.
You really pulled that one out of your hat.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I feel so good about myself.
He pulled it out of the gimp.
that was gimp material right there.
Oh, I feel so good right now. I don't even care that you're not going to do the interview with Field Yates. I'm at that level right now.
I'm still stunned. I am stunned you got that right.
I might smoke a cigarette. I just might. I might light up right now. Hey, settle down.
Oh, my right. goodness.
Come on. How good was that?
That was phenomenal, Dave.
Why can't I get credit? That was a good job.
That was vintage Stomp Rothenberg.
That was good stuff.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.